Welcome to Webinar Wednesday. Today is Wednesday, April the 17th, 2019. And my name is Aaron Lurie. I'm the Director of Professional Learning here at NAESP. Today's topic for Webinar Wednesdays is financial transparencies on school level spending. Our speaker for today is the Director of the Edgenomics Lab and is a research professor at Georgetown University. Dr. Rosa, welcome to Webinar Wednesdays.
Thank you. I like that alliteration. This is great.
Can you tell the NAESP universe a little bit more about yourself and the Edgenomics Lab?
Yeah, we were just talking about this before we got started. So the Edgenomics Lab is a research center. It's a made-up name. It combines the words education and economics because it's a research center that's all about money in education. And so we do a lot of training, we do a lot of research, we do a lot of analysis, and that's what the center is. It's Georgetown University, and so that's what it is.
Well, I know everybody in NAESP universe wants to know about spending money, so I'm going to hand this over to you. And if we have any questions, we know that we're going to put out questions in our chat box today. So, Dr. Rosa, enjoy.
Thank you. I'm going to go back to this opening prompt as you all are kind of logging in and getting situated. What we're going to talk about today is the soon-to-be-released motherload of financial data. We'll have financial data on schools. So take a moment here to read the prompt and chime in. The headline, district short changes, a low-income school, that could be a real headline. We have basically two schools in the same district. They cover the same grade levels. Both have similar student enrollment and populations, including special needs. School A is in a more affluent area of the district, and has a small number of kids on free reduced lunch. School B is in a less affluent area, more students receiving free reduced lunch. But it turns out that school A's per pupil expenditures are significantly higher than school B. And I'd love to know if you think this could happen in your community, what you think of this. Do you think this is a problem? Let's say this shows up in your local paper. Would you be surprised? What do you think? So this is a good chance for you to chime in. It's not a hypothetical scenario. It's actually a real one that's happened in several places. And I'll give you a moment, if you can, to go ahead and respond. All right. Well, I'm going to jump in. You may, I'll give you some context for this. Generally speaking, in education, we've only in the past looked at spending by district. And now what we'll be doing is looking at spending by school. And as the data are emerging, there's a bunch of places that have kind of a whoops, like I didn't realize that our spending may not have sort of matched our narrative. We're going to talk about that today, in part because it's going to have a lot of implications for principals. We anticipate that principals will be in the hot seat when it comes to this. Not that you've decided the spending, but that you'll be expected to be able to communicate it about it. So I thought I'd do this webinar to get everybody up to speed. But maybe we'll start with this. On average, how much is spent per pupil in K-12 education across all public funds? I think sometimes it helps to know the average per pupil number to have a sense of whether your school's number is high or low or whatever. If you look across the U.S., any guesses on how much we spend? Usually when I teach this in person, I make you hold up fingers for how many thousands of dollars, but we're in this format. I am not sure if you have a number, but I will share it. We spend on average in the U.S. Almost $14,000 per pupil. We're right around $14,000 per pupil in the country, and that's all in on public funds. That number is much higher if you're in the New England area or D.C. or New York. It's much lower if you are in Idaho or Nevada or Utah or Arizona. California is right around that average. So if you're wondering how, when the numbers come out, your spending compares to to other schools, you can kind of think of 14,000 as the average. So I would ask how much is spent per student at your school. And I'm guessing you may not have access to that number. Let me pause here and just make sure, Honor, maybe you have a sense of whether or not the chat is working and people
are
on.
The chat is working, folks. We'd really encourage you to, on your bar it says chat, if you'd open that up. And then you can keep tabs if you would write something in on that. I would love to hear from you.
Yeah, and if
or you can use the question box if you like, but we'd prefer the chat.
Well, we'll jump forward. I think you'll get smarter at this as we go. Chances are you probably don't know the number, and that's probably because it's not been shared. It's not how we've carved up money in the past. We've talked about how much is spent on instruction or how much is spent on salaries, but not per school. So that's going to be new when we get into this. And another question that probably would be the next one you'd want to ask is that number at my school more or less than other schools in the same district? And that's worth knowing. Sometimes when you look at school districts, you'll see, wow, there's one school that spends a lot and the district hadn't really sort of, you know, maybe it's a magnet school or a really small school or something like that. But it'll be worth knowing because I think even parents will log on and see these data and have asked these very same questions.
One person has responded 13,000 per student. So I guess that's,
oh, that's good. So I don't see that in my chat.
Yeah. I guess it depends on the number of special ed students and student attendance. Is that correct?
It can. Small schools tend to have higher numbers. But what I'm saying is I don't see that in the chat.
It was a private one to me.
Oh, okay. Got it. Okay, great. Thanks. I just want to make sure it was working. So that can matter. We'll get to that in a moment. Another thing you'll want to ask, is it more or less than other schools with similar demographics? So if you're at a school that is a kind of a special ed autistic school or something, you might ask that, you would assume that that number is probably higher than many other schools. But if you're a school with sort of higher amounts of low-income students, find other schools that are similar to yours and see, is my number higher or lower? And if so, why or why not? And what does that mean for conversations going forward? So we put this question up a lot. Who decided how to spend that money? Who decided to spend more on special ed or more on salaries or more on other kinds of things? And that question, a lot of people will say, is it the Secretary DeVos? Is it it's definitely not the federal government. They don't decide how to spend that money. It's not generally even your state leaders. What it is, the answer to that is technically school boards. School boards are the ones that have the fiduciary responsibility to divvy up money inside their district and decide how to spend that. Usually district leaders submit a spending budget and the board approves it. But if you're unhappy with that outcome, school boards are the ones that own it. They sometimes forget they own it, but they're the ones that own that responsibility. All the money comes from the state and local sources, and it goes into a big bank account at the district. And she asks, some of that money comes with strings attached. And, you know, there are a lot of things that affect that. Like, you know, the school board might, then the district might sign a contract with its labor partners. But if the outcomes of this are not what you think they are, it's the school boards who sort of own that. And so we'll expect to see a lot more activity going forward with school boards, around this. But, and districts will be, principals will be important communicators. So I thought before we jump in, really, you know, more deeply, I would share this. These are three models of how resources can get to schools. The first model is the first panel on the left. And that is the predominant model in place in 99% of the districts in this country. Although not some very big districts. So this is where your federal, your state, your local money go into the district. The district has a pot of money. The district decides what to purchase, how many teachers to have, how many reading coaches, laptops, things like that, and then allocates those things out to schools. In the second model, this is in some large decentralized districts like New York City, Houston, Boston, Chicago, Denver, Baltimore, and places like that. And what happens is the money goes to the district, and the district will say, huh, I'm going to pass on a certain amount of the cash to the school, still has cash, and then they'll use a weighted student formula. But each school gets a certain amount of dollars per pupil and then makes its own budgets and decides between maybe having more teachers and less specialists or more specialists and larger class sizes or things like that. And the last model is one in place in charter schools where the money actually goes straight to the school and directly to the school. It doesn't go through a district. And then the school chooses give a certain amount of that to its organizing partner, whether that's a CMO. So we're really today mostly talking about this first panel, although we could have some schools in the second panel. And I thought we would do this as a poll. Which would your teachers prefer? So if we think of these as cost equivalent options, would they prefer a $5,000 pay raise, or would they prefer two fewer students in each class? Maybe we could put, Anna, can we launch the poll?
Yeah, I can launch the poll. I put all three questions together.
That's fine. That's great. Great, great.
So I'm going to launch the poll now. If you guys would take a moment here and choose your answers to the three questions.
And these are the kinds of decisions that usually districts make, but affect schools, right? Like they'll say, do we want to do a pay raise or do we want to lower class size? Do we want to do a pay raise or hire more aides? But they affect teachers. Do we want to do a pay raise or have more prep time? And what you'll see when people do this is that they'll have, these are cost equivalent things. It costs the same amount of money. It costs, you know, $5,000 per teacher to make class sizes smaller, or actually it's maybe a little bit more than that. The pay raise would be higher. You don't have to overthink it, just guess one, but you should see a poll on your screen. And if you do see a poll on your screen, this is a great way to kind of think about cost equivalent trade-offs, decisions about how to divvy up the money that comes into the district. Should we offer pay raises to teachers, or should we hire more staff and make class sizes smaller, have more aides, more prep time?
Okay, I'm going to the poll. We've got at least half that have participated, which is good. 67% said that they would prefer two fewer students in each class they teach for question number one. Question number two, 100% said they'd take the 5K pay raise.
Mm-hmm.
And for question number three, 67% said the 5K pay raise.
But on the first one, they wanted the smaller classes, right? Interesting. So we've done this survey. The reason I ask is we've done this survey, a researcher named Dan Goldhaber did the survey, actually, of teachers broadly across the country. So would you rather have $5,000 pay or two fewer students? And that's after a lot of documented research saying what really matters is smaller class sizes. But what people found was over 80% chose the pay raise when offered them in cost equivalent options. And so we often talk about these things outside of the context of money. We say, would you rather have a smaller class or more pay? It's like, well, it kind of depends on how much more pay, right? Like if you give me $1 million or one fewer kid in my class, I'm going to take $1 million. But if you put up what we've done here are cost equivalent things for the district. I can either raise your pay by 5,000. That would be the same amount of money as it would be to lower class size by two. The pay is actually a little bit higher. And so many of you pointed out that for the second two options, it looks like people would prefer the cash. And in fact, consistently across the country, people would take the cash. But we don't put these things on the table for people. And so sometimes you see discussions that are talking about these in the abstract and not realizing, you know, I really want an aide. Well, do you want an aide so much that you're going to take less pay? And then they think, oh, well, I didn't think it was a full $5,000. I was going to get a pay raise of $500 or something. And I think that's what this new data is going to allow for more conversations all the way down inside schools about what people think is the best way to spend the money. So let's close this and move on. We have this picture of this girl with a jaw dropping, and she's very excited about the fact that ESSA, the new federal law, includes a new requirement for to report spending by school. And this is, we think, huge. It's a game changer, and it has big implications for principals. And I'll take you forward on this and show you that this many states, the colored states, are already just in the last month or two surfacing data. So if you see a state that's lit up, the blue states are the ones that have report card, that the data is on the report cards. It meets the requirement. New York actually publishes budgets, which is like their planned spending, not their expenditures, how they actually spent it last year. In the green are ones that have some sort of spending data website, but it's not yet in compliance with ESSA. But it means you can start logging on and finding out how much money was spent at your school. And for the rest of the states, you will, in the next 9 to 10 months, be able to see those data. And those data, we think, are going to trigger all sorts of headlines and stories, things like stories about equity, like the one we just talked about before. Maybe the district spends more on affluent students, and that will likely trigger a conversation in a community about that. Maybe ones like they spend more on the affluent schools, and it's because the teacher salaries are higher. This is also something that's going to be playing out in these numbers. If a school has more senior teachers, it may well show up as being more expensive because they will, the district will have to post the real expenses of that building, including the real salaries of the teachers who work in that building. So if you're a school with a lot of junior teachers or really high turnover, you're going to look lower spending probably. And this has surprised some people, thinking, oh, we should adjust it for teacher salaries. And others say, why? We should show the real salaries of the people, because if a school has really senior teachers and very little turnover, that's some level of resources that the other schools don't. And so let's be honest about how much it's costing us. So we imagine there'll be some conversations there.
So Dr. Rose, I had a question.
Sure.
So principals are trying to recruit teachers at this time, and because of the turnover rate, and they have seasoned teachers or they have new teachers. But with the salary, as you said, a principal could possibly get two new teachers off the price of a senior teacher. So the money changes in that hand in the case of, should I hire somebody who's has 20 years or somebody has 1 or 2 years experience, and how's my school climate going to be, because I now have to develop a new teacher as a principal and help them as they grow into their pedagogy with students and things of that sort. So what's a strategy that you could give with principals trying to manage their budget with having senior teachers but want to recruit younger teachers, but they have a struggle with that?
Well, I'll tell you what, most schools don't get to keep the savings. So if you hire the junior teacher, the district gets the savings.
Oh, okay.
But the school does not. So it's not, there are a few around the country, but not very many, where, you know, you get your budget, maybe it's $9 million, and that budget is yours. So if you hired a junior teacher, you have more money left over. But almost always the case is that the district benefits, but not the school. And so they say, I gave you 15 FTEs.
Right.
And whether you hire senior ones or junior ones, you're still getting 15 FTEs. And in that case, then, obviously most schools are going to go with the best possible teacher they can. Now that's a bummer if you're a school that has a very little ability to recruit teachers, right? If you're a school in a high needs area and you're like, oh, well, that's all fine and dandy, except I only had two applicants and both of them were brand new teachers. So while that school over there just spent a bunch of my money on their senior teachers, I've got nothing left over to show for the fact that I only had access to really junior teachers. And I think there's going to be some conversations about that. There are not clear answers on what to do. But some schools might say, well, since I have junior teachers and that's just the way the chips fell, I'd like some cash back because I don't have as much money in my building. And that seems unfair, particularly if I'm a school with a lot of high needs students.
Correct.
Yeah. So I think we're going to see some conversations on this. So I think people will want to get up to speed on this and see how their school shakes out and whether or not those conversations are going to likely bring, you know, some attention on your school.
Well, thanks so much, Dr. Rosa.
Sure. You know, you might see questions like this. The district STEM school spends double the city average. We've seen that in places. And when that happens, you know, people might start asking questions like, why is it so expensive? And the more money spent at one school, the less money there is for the other schools. So when you see a really expensive school, the rest of the schools, that means some of the money that went to the district didn't go to them. Or you might see things like this. You know, a school gets the same per pupil expenditure. That makes trade-offs, and they can support a summer learning program. So maybe they've said, we don't need a full-time librarian. We're going to go with an aide in the library instead. And now we have this summer program, or maybe we have, you know, you'll see a lot more attention on how the money is used. So I think that will likely happen. We've seen, when data have emerged, schools say, hey, by the way, what's going on? It looks like we're spending a lot of money at the central office and we want more cash at the school building. And I'll give you a real quick overview of how this could play out. Here's some numbers. We've changed the names, but these are the kinds of things you might see. We'll call the central district. And then the first column, Maple Elementary, you see a site level total. Maybe they're spending $9,000 per pupil at the school site and another $5,000. You know, if you look across this district, another $5,000 in that site's share of central resources. And when we see that, and that might be a fixed share, but people might say, wow, I'm looking at $14,000 total. And yet a bunch of that money is in central. And I think this is a good time. A lot of that money does things maybe like transportation and food services, maybe the, you know, data infrastructure, budgeting, HR. But this is also a good time for schools to put some pressure back on their systems to say, you know, what is that? And are we getting the full value out of that $5,000 per pupil? And the number you'll be able to compare across districts will be this grand total, because districts will do different things with their site share. Some of them might put food services in the school building and some might put food services in the central. But if you want to compare yourself across districts, you want to look at that grand total.
Dr. Rosa, quick question on, can you tell us a little bit about how does that share, that central share, you know, work? I mean, do the schools have a say in how that's allocated, or is that strictly district?
Well, one thing I would say is schools always have a say if you exercise it. So you can call your school district and say, $5,000 seems like a lot. What's in there? And where we've seen principals chime in and ask about that, we've seen districts sort of open their books, be more understanding of those dollars, and sometimes reapportion more of those dollars out to the school. And an example is Denver. Denver recently did this, Baltimore's done it too, where principals said, hey, it seems like if the district's spending $14,000 and I'm only getting $8,000 or $9,000, there's a lot of money up at Central. And some of that money may not be much give, maybe transportation dollars or things like that. But sometimes a fresh look at all that money, and there's a bunch of really underused programs that schools say, I know you do that, but we're not getting much value out of that. An example we had in Baltimore is that the district was buying cell phones and giving them to all the staff. And they were saying they were giving these cell phones to the schools. And they were saying, you know, it's cost efficient for us to buy cell phones at the district level because we can get them at a lower price. And the school said, we don't use those phones. So how about you just give us the cash? And that was a really important conversation, but they hadn't had it until they started kind of wrestling back and forth around the money. And so we think that schools should chime in and ask about that. Sometimes there are programs going on at central office that don't need to happen. There was a district where the district was saying, well, we have this program where, you know, we approve the field trips that go on in schools. And the school said, why do you? We plan these field trips ourselves. You don't need approval. You don't need a whole infrastructure for that. And they said, you're right, we don't. And they eliminated it and gave the money out. So I think there are plenty of these opportunities for schools to chime in and maybe either get more value out of that money. It's had very few people taking a look at it, and we encourage you to do that.
Yeah. Do you advise districts to partner with stakeholders to balance their budget when funds are lacking? I mean...
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, the more people who participate in decisions about how to use resources, honestly, the better. And I will hear a lot, and you'll hear this in a few minutes, of principals saying, I'm uncomfortable with that. In my district, principals don't ask questions about money. And we say, then you're not doing your job. And that's because, you're the ones who have eyes on how these resources are impacting your kids. The money is there for your kids. And if you have ideas about how better to spend that money, well then, you know, shame on you if you're not suggesting them. And so you don't have to be a pain in the neck for the district, but you can call and say, hey, I see that my kids really need this instead of that. And, you know, and advocate on behalf of your students. And that means that you're doing a better job being stewards of the public funds on behalf of your students.
Great. Thank you.
Sure. And so we can look at some more headlines on things like this. Here's one. Blakely has the same per pupil expenditure as peers, but students learn more. So this headline sort of says, we're going to be able to compare spending and outcomes, and school report cards allow people to do that. So let me do the flip side of that. Pop Elementary spends more, but the students continue to fail. So what that means is we're going to be able to, and there are going to be new probably visualization systems that do this, compare the outcomes by school, which we've had for a while, with the spending by school. And let me show you what that looks like when we actually do that. You can, each one of these circles is a school, and you can array expenditures on the bottom and outcomes on the vertical. And you can start to see the difference between up there an A in that quadrant, a high spending, higher outcome school, or maybe B, a high spending, lower outcome school, or C and D, where you have lower spending high outcomes or lower spending low outcomes, and start to have conversations about what are we getting for our money. And I think if your district hasn't been talking about this, they need to, and there can be ways where you can filter on the right. You know, maybe I only want to look at high poverty schools, so I can take into account student demographics and things like that. But we need to know the difference between a high spending, high performing school, even than a, you know, low spending, high performing school, and vice versa. And doing this, I think, is a great way for a principal to also have that conversation with your staff, right? That conversation, if you're, whether you're talking to your superintendent or whether you're talking to your teachers, it's really important to have a sense of which quadrant you're in. And I would say you can imagine this conversation if your school D, where you're kind of getting shortchanged here, but you've been a low performing school, you might say, hey, look, we can do our best with the money, but we need to make sure the district's giving us our fair share. And we will go and talk to schools like school C and see what we can learn from them. And at the same time, we need that assurance that the district is going to work to get us our share of the money, because it's going to be really hard to convince my staff they need to work harder if we're being shortchanged. Similarly, if you're school B, you might be a low performing school and say, okay, wow, I do actually have a lot of money relative to my peers. So we've got to roll up our sleeves and figure out how to put this to work and solve our problems. And that's a different conversation than we've been shortchanged. Maybe it's, we want to use our money differently and we're going to have that conversation with the district. We, you know, maybe we've gotten, staff or even resource allocations that aren't particularly a good fit for our kids. And so we need to kind of figure out how to change that. But the issue there isn't about being shortchanged. It's about not getting what we all should be getting for our money.
Great.
Okay. So these numbers are going to kind of come out. who they're going to call. And we know for sure principals are that. So we've been doing this. You know, it's interesting because, you know, communities value their principals, trust their principals, and that can be a first stop, like, hey, what does this mean? Districts also trust their principals, which means that principals are in this really powerful position to set the conversation. So we did some research on what principals do and don't know about money, and also some other stakeholders, and I want to share that with you because there's some important learnings there. When we do interviews with principals and district leaders, we hear often things like this: all in, my school receives about $40,000 a year. That number, by the way, cannot be true because that is less than even the principal's own salary. But it may be the number they've had visibility into, like the supply budget or something like that. And so what we're finding is that principals, for the most part, have not been given access to what is the full spending on their school? What is the full cost of the librarian and the recess monitor and my vice principal and my reading coach and my second grade teachers and everything else? And if so, they realize maybe my school is spending more like $5 million. And principals need visibility into that, because then they're the ones who can potentially think about whether or not I'm getting full value out of all of this cash.
But Marguerite, question for you on that. How do they get access to that if they haven't been, you know? I mean, what's the route?
I think you got to turn around and ask the district for it. We've been telling districts you need to give it to your principals. And if you've only shown them the $40,000, then you're basically telling the principal, spend a lot of time managing that $40,000 instead of spend a lot of time managing that $5 million. And really, it's a mistake to forget that all the resources are in the labor around you. That's mm-hmm. the real money at your disposal to improve the benefits for kids. And you got to put that money to work, whether it is your librarian or things like that. If you're thinking, my librarian is an $85,000 fully loaded position, and have I gotten the full value out of that? That's mm-hmm. where you could turn to the librarian and say, hey, enough with the hallway duty and the kind of chaos in the library. I need these kids to be reading. So you've got to figure out, as someone an $85,000 position, how you can put your time into getting a book in every kid's hand, making sure these kids are reading, whether it's over vacations or weekends or whatever. We need our reading scores to go up. And so let's figure out how to get that done with this investment of $85,000 in the librarian. And I think that's where that role of the principal comes in handy.
Well, Ken, do you think, you know, since most schools have a budget manager, would you advise a principal to complete their own budget so they know where the money's being spent and all of that?
Most schools don't actually have a budget manager. A lot of times that's done at the district level, but I would say that the principal needs to see what it looks like and become familiar with those numbers. And we're going to do a little more today to help people get familiar with those numbers, but generally speaking, there's a couple of exercises. We have some that we do in our certificate program that you can do to kind of really build your fluency with the finance so that you can look through the resources at your school and see, you know, what is the total and where's all my money going. So let's do a little more of this. Another one of these quotes we hear: I don't get as much money as other schools in the district because my school is in a neighborhood with lower property values. So that statement represents a fundamental misunderstanding of how finance works, honestly. We did hear this a lot. So what happens is the money goes all to the district, whether it comes from property values or anything else. And then the district has it in one big budget and decides how to divvy it up. And there's no reason that just because you have lower property values in your neighborhood compared to another neighborhood in the district that you should be getting less money. That's not in any sort of law or anything else like that. And so I think we want to make sure principals know that, and if they feel like they're being shortchanged, that they speak up.
Well, I had a question about that because I remember when I was a principal, certain schools did get extra funding through their parents. Being in a lower income area, we didn't get the funding, but if a school in a prestigious neighborhood wanted an art teacher at the school, the parents chipped in on the PTA and they paid for our teacher where in another demographics, your PTA presence was like 12%. So the different areas in the neighborhood reflect a little bit with finances, depending on the parent support. And
so here's the mistake about that assumption. I think we spend a lot of attention as a country focused on the private donations. 50,000 would be a lot of money to make in a school, at an auction or something like that. That would be a healthy number. Most schools are spending in excess of $5 million, $6 million, $7 million, $8 million, $10 million. So we spend a lot of time going, but they got that 50,000 from the auction. And we're not paying attention to the other 5 million or more that we got through public sources. And even if you think a school has, like, let's say 1,000 students and you're getting $50,000, what you've gotten is about $50 per kid.
Okay.
You have $14,000 through public sources. And so I think if we think the real money's in the donations, we're wrong. The real money is in the public money. That stuff is pennies on the dollar. And in fact, on average, if you're a high poverty school, you're pulling in $1,000 to $2,000 in federal funds, Title I and things like that.
Correct.
And so those dollars are really pale compared to the $50 a kid they're pulling in through an auction. And so there are examples of a school in Aspen, Colorado or something like that, that do pull in real meaningful money from donations. But for most of the rest of us, the amount that we're getting in through kind of the community auction or something like that is honestly very small compared to the amount that we're getting. And all told, in this country, we have an adult in the building for every 7 or 8 students. So it could be the case that another school does hire that. Usually districts don't let private funds hire public staff. That's not generally how it works. What they do is sometimes use it to donate coordinators or hire a crossing guard or things like that. It can happen. They can get an art teacher from some private source. But, you know, the other school still has an adult for every 7 to 8 kids. And so I don't want us to take our eye off the real money here. Don't spend your time worrying about the private money and then miss the public funds that are right there at your school already. If you feel like there are some real inequities, it's a great conversation to have in the community, but go look up the public numbers first to make sure, you know, that difference isn't just a distraction.
Thanks so much, Dr. Rosa.
Sure. Is the district shortchanging my school? I assume not, but I have no idea. And that I hope principals do go look up these numbers. I think if a school is being shortchanged, we think you should speak up. And you should, you know, speak up on behalf of your kids. If it's not shortchanged and maybe you're even getting more than your share, well, this would be a good thing to mention to your staff who might be operating in a position of, well, you know, that other school got this and that and we don't have that. You know, woe is us. Well, we do have, whatever it is, maybe $15,000 a student. Let's start putting the money we do have to work, especially if it's not less than your peers. District leader, we give extra staff to our higher needs schools, but they don't know that. They assume all schools have what they have. We heard this a lot in these interviews, that schools were not sort of taking stock of their extra counselors and their social workers or reading positions and saying, you know, we don't have any of this stuff. And it's like, wow, you actually do have more than your peers. Now put it to work. And I think that can be an important reminder for folks too. My salary, just teachers would say, this is a fascinating finding. We asked people, you know, how much money spent in your school. Teachers were the one that came up with the lowest number. Sometimes they said $1,000 a student. At which point we'd say, well, what about your salary? Shouldn't that be counted as part of what's spent on students? And they were like, no, that's for us. That's not for the kids. And this is a confusing point here, because parents will think of teacher salaries as part of what's spent on kids, but teachers don't. And this may be an important reminder to make for teachers, like, hey, all in, you know, we're spending on our teacher salaries a good $20,000 or more in benefits, plus an average of $60,000. Let's make sure that those investments are realizing their full potential for students, and helping teachers connect their own salary to what's spent on students may help keep them focused on student outcomes and things like that. I think the reason for this is because sometimes collective bargaining partners communicate about teacher salaries as what belongs to a teacher. It's yours. It's, you deserve it. You're entitled to it. And that may be the only conversation a teacher has had about money. And so if principals can jump in and start helping discuss money with their teachers, they might be able to mentally make those connection for teachers between their own salaries and part of what's spent on kids. Here's another one. Parent, I can accept a cut in something if I understand what's at stake. And often a principal's the one who can do that. Like, we're not going to spend as much money on our librarians, but that's because we wanted to put more money into our counseling program or lower class sizes or other, you know, offer more extracurriculars. And by the way, most of our books are in the classrooms now. So parents can get that if we talk to them about the money. They also, by the way, want to hear from their principals. A lot of people are worried about parents because they say, oh, you don't want to talk to parents about money because they'll get mad. We spend extra money on kids with disabilities or low-income kids. We did not find that. Parents fully accept that we should be spending more money on students with greater needs. So I wouldn't steer clear of those conversations. And we heard this, I mentioned this before. In my district, principals don't question budget choices. And I'm here to say, do it. And I'll tell you, I taught a whole principal group one time, and I said this very same thing. And one principal had said, you know, rather than getting, you know, replacing this librarian position, I'd like a half-time librarian and use the other money for this, that, and the other. And I said, well, if you haven't called the district and said that, shame on you. And a whole bunch of the people during this, I said, do it now, right? Send the CFO an email. And a bunch of them started emailing the CFO with what they wanted. You know, I said, be, don't just ask for stuff. You know, be clear about the money. Like, I'd rather have this instead of that. You can't just ask for things and the district doesn't have money. But if you have an idea of a trade-off and you want to weigh in on it, do that. And the CFO came down to the session at lunch and said, okay, I got your emails. First of all, no one's ever said that before. So, you know, you can't expect me to change things overnight if you've never voice this. I didn't know you would rather have these changes. But I will say I can work on these changes over time. And in fact, I can start to pilot some of these changes with this group right here. And I'm glad to hear that. But just to be clear, no one's ever said anything. And I thought, see, you know, they're willing to have a conversation, but they may not know that you have a preference. So chime in. So let's do another poll.
Yeah, okay, before we get to that, a couple questions.
Sure.
Broderick asks, how do you make your budget work for your school improvement plan? How do you link, you know, the budget and the finance to that?
Well, great question. And the first thing I would say is talk about it. And we do this often as we're like, have a budget meeting. Then we finish the budget meeting. Then we walk down the hall into a whole separate group of people. We talk about our goals for kids and our strategic plan and our, you know, teacher professional development and things and stuff like that. Those should be the same meeting, right? They should be the exact same meeting. In fact, they should involve a lot of teachers and so on to say, like, maybe even start with that scatter plot that I talked about. So here we are, you know, maybe we're a school in the upper left-hand quadrant. We're a lower spending school, but we're killing it. We're beating the odds for our kids, especially when you compare them to other schools like ours. In that case, we should kind of protect what we've been doing. We shouldn't go rake on to radical changes. What we've been doing is working. Or maybe we're a school in the lower right-hand quadrant. We're an expensive school, and it's not been working. And we need to start by just coming to terms with that. We say it's the stages of grief, right? People get mad and go, oh, well, the kids are lazy and, you know, we didn't really ever want this stuff. And it's because, you know, all the kids are on their cell phones now or who knows what. And we might need to say, okay, so how are we going to solve that? How are we going to take the resources we do have and solve the problems in our building? And let's roll up our sleeves and get to work. And I would say that step of wrestling with how much money do we have and what outcomes are we wanting and how can we get there? The answer is not necessarily in the fine details about how you spend your money. And that's a confusing finding, right? Like two schools can spend their money in exactly the same way and get really different outcomes. It's very, you know, if you're a finance researcher, that is a bummer of a finding because you're like, they're looking for the answers in the spending. But if you stop for a moment and wrestle with that, you might realize a lot of it's in the behavior of all the people in the building. It's in the relationships. It's in the connections that staff make with kids. It's in the way that staff work together. It's with the relationships with families in the community. And so sort of wrestling with how much money we have and how we can put it to work is actually a way to trigger those behaviors. It's a way to say, we're waiting for a white, you know, knight to come fly in here to solve this problem or something. That's not what it is. We've got what we need in the building. Let's roll up our sleeves and tap into the talent and the expertise of the people we have and cover for our weaknesses and figure it out. If there's a problem we need to solve, then let's figure out how to solve it. If our kids aren't coming to school, you know, maybe we do want to make a trade-off between a librarian and somebody who can motivate students to get them in the building. Maybe the chess club has been working and kids are coming. Who knows what it is? But I think it's about that roll up our sleeves and figure out what's the best way to leverage these dollars and get the most for it. And then consider options, real cash equivalent options. So here's one. Which do you as a principal prefer? You got $85,000. Do you want a new FTE in your building or would you like to use that money as stipends? It turns out you could offer stipends for some of your best teachers to take on more students. You know, you could say, I'll give you $3,000 extra for each additional student my best teacher takes in their classroom. And when you do that, you can move a lot of kids. You can move almost 30 kids. You could say, I'm going to use the money to pay for a reading boot camp in the summer for some of my struggling readers. I'm going to do a month-long reading boot camp. I'm going to make it worth the teacher's while. I'm going to bring some kids in. You know, some of the parents in my community maybe are really happy about the free extra child care, and I'm going to use that instead of the FTE. But the one thing I would note here, sometimes an extra in FTE is the right move. Sometimes you could take that same cash. It's benefits free cash because you can go out there and buy extra time on people who've already been, you know, paying. We've already paid their health care and so on, and use that money to potentially raise the salary of the people in your building through stipends. We have this whole worksheet on this where you can like try out using the money in all these different ways and then think about it. You could use the money to pay your kids to come to school. People sort of explore that. And at the end, what they're doing really is figuring out what $85,000 is worth. And they really probably choose different choices, but at the end, they know what to expect from that investment because they know what the value of it is. We do these kinds of activities. We have a certificate at Georgetown. It's 2 days. The next one is June 19th and 20th. Mm-hmm. And you, it's called the Certificate of Ed Finance, and you spend a lot of time thinking about money and what you should get for it, how to talk about it, how to communicate with it. And we end up with a lot of district leaders and a lot of principals in that program as they're trying to figure out how to leverage resources to do the most for their kids.
Okay, we've got our responses in, and I will share the results. It looks like 75% would add one FTE.
We have found, interestingly, I'm sort of curious about that. Most people do the activity. Most principals who do the activity after the activity rather have the cash. All right. So what we're going to do is because this money information is coming out and principals are likely to need to talk about money more often in ways that they haven't, we're going to share some research on how to talk about money to build trust. And that is, most people don't have many skills in this, but this, with the research, the messaging research, there's some really clear learnings that there are certain words you should say and certain words you should not say if you want to be trustworthy when it comes to finance. First of all, there's an enormous level of distrust. I think principals are coming at this with more inherent trust from their communities. People don't trust their district, but you might find that the district is going to ask you to communicate more because principals have more trust. And parents and teachers want to hear from their principals when it comes to money. They want this to be communicated from with them. And we know already that principals think in terms of non-labor costs, and that that is a problem. Principals should be talking about the costs of all their labor too, not just the $40,000 in your supply budget. So use the money and start talking about the labor, like where we invested, you know, another $90,000 in our social worker position, and that's really going to help with our students or whatever it is. All financial communication should reference students. Do not say, you know, we invested this to balance our budget. No one cares about the budget. No one cares about financial sustainability. No one cares about anything if the sentence doesn't end in students. Even if you're making a cut or anything else like that, you're going to want to say that we are doing this so we can protect what matters most for our students, or that we did this choice because that will better serve a larger number of our students, or to leverage our limited funds so we can do the most with our resources. You want to make sure you end that sentence about finance with students. You have no idea how many people get this one wrong. A lot of districts get this one wrong. We pull quotes off the internet all the time and have, you know, have them, bring them back to people and say, remember, look, you were supposed to end the sentence in students. Okay. Parents, teachers, and principals are comfortable spending more on high needs students. We said that. When you do talk about things, we suggest you use the word fair, not equitable. And that's a confusing thing. People think of equity as something bad's about to come down. You know, it's an eat your broccoli kind of moment. But if they say fair, it's more uplifting. It's positive. This is going to be good for all of our students. Community and teachers want to hear about financial information in a format that allows them to weigh in. So if you're ever saying, we decide to spend money on this, end it, you know, both what it's going to do for kids, but we want to hear from you. We want you to weigh in. Let me know. Send me an email. Feel free to fill out a card at the end of this meeting because we want to hear from you. If you do that, people go, oh, this person is trustworthy. They're not just here to give me one-way communication. Even if you're relaying one-way communication, like the district just cut all our librarians, you could say, but I want to hear from you on how that affects you and how this plays out going forward, and I will relay your concerns to the district. If you say that, people go, oh, that person must be good at their job. I trust them. This is, I have smart leaders at the helm. Make sure that if you're talking about evidence or research, you're acknowledging local context. Like, you know, we said to invest some new money in preschool because the research says preschool is great, but also because our 5-year-olds were coming to school not prepared. We want to make sure we do the most for our students in our community. Want to avoid any business lingo. Don't talk about efficiency or productivity or any word that sounds like that. People will think you must think their kids are widgets. And also, citing dollar figures improves your credibility. So get good at the money. Now, I'm going to give you a chance to practice just that before we finish. Do say, don't say. The word at the bottom, you tell me, should we say this or not? And the answer is, don't say reallocation. Sounds like a business word. They don't want to hear about it. They want to hear about what you're going to do for your kids. Can you say leveraging dollars to do more for students? That you can. It's optimistic. It's positive. People will say, that's good. I'm glad we're doing this, whatever the financial effort is. Even if it's a teacher salary thing. You know, we're giving a raise to our teachers because that allows us to retain our best quality talent, keep them in the classroom where they can do their work for students. Efficiency. That one is a don't say. It's back in the category of business terms that you will now erase from your vocabulary. That's been hard for me, I have to tell you. I grew up using these words. Okay. Do more for less. That one, again, is a don't say, in part because it's negative, right? We're going to all work hard and we're going to get, you know, we have less money. What the flip side of that is something a little bit more optimistic, things like we're going to put our limited resources to work to maximize the value of our students. Okay. Link the discussion to students. Yep, definitely want to do that. Admit the trade-off. We could have done X or Y, maybe field hockey or track team, and we chose Why? Because it helps us, you know, do Z for students. Yes, you want to really be clear about the trade-off. Acknowledge a cut is just that, a cut. No, I think you want to say we are cutting this, but that allows us to protect what other things that matter, or we're going to do, make these accommodations to make sure that kids are going to be well served, and we want to hear from you on how this plays out. Those are the kind of light phrases you use. Spending smarter is more positive. You say that phrase. That's a yes. This sounds optimistic, people. Oops. Communicate with dollar amounts. Yes. Do that. This one's an interesting one. We were told we had to. The answer there is no. Don't say that. It sounds, you know what happens? People say, wow, you must not be good at your job. If you just take one-way messages, you must not be a really talented person. Somebody who is good at their job would have participated in the conversation. So if you say, you know, recent decision from the district is we're cutting this, and if you say that's what they told us, not good. If you say, but, you know, we're going to weigh in and make sure that the district knows exactly what this means for our kids and try to brainstorm with them about how to make the best outcome possible. This phrase, we have the flexibility to make trade-offs that meet the needs of our students. The answer there is yes. That's the kind of empowering message that people want to hear, that you are participating, that you're considering this on a regular basis. Okay, so final minute. I'll just wrap up and say, if this stuff is interesting to you, come sign up for a certificate. It's at Georgetown. You get the credits and things like that. If this is a passion of yours, you'll learn a lot of this, how to talk about money, how to read budgets, how to participate, make decisions. We'd love to have you. Any other questions?
Yes, I want to thank you, Dr. Rosa, on behalf of NAESP, our Executive Director, Dr. Earl Franks, and our Associate Executive Director, Gail Morgan, as well as my partner on behind the scenes, Honor Feedy. We'd like to thank you for this installment of Webinar Wednesdays. I know that this information will be used by our NAESP universe. So I thank you again for this information. And Dr. Rosa's information is at the bottom. If you have any further questions, you can email her at it's mr1170@georgetown.edu. So, again, thank you all for joining our Webinar Wednesdays series. We'll catch you next month for the next Webinar Wednesdays. My name is Aaron Lurie. I'm the Director of Professional Learning here at NAESP. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks for coming.